Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how has the attitude of Israel changed towards Israelis who have gone to live in the diaspora? Dr. Yossi Schein is a professor of political science and chairman of the political science department at Tel Aviv University. He's also a full professor of comparative government and diaspora politics at Georgetown University and the founding director of the program for Jewish civilization there. Dr. Schein has also held many visiting appointments, including at Yale University, Wesleyan University, the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, and Middlebury College, among others. He has lectured around the world and has been honored with grants and awards from numerous international institutions. Dr. Schein has published over 50 scholarly articles in academic journals and books. He's also a regular contributor to the op-ed page of Israel's leading daily, Yediot Ahronot, and has contributed numerous essays to other newspapers and magazines, including the New York Times, the Foreign Service Journal, Haaretz, and the Jerusalem Post, among others. Schein is also a nationally known commentator on Israeli television and radio, and has been a guest on many political news shows in Europe and the United States. One of Dr. Schein's areas of study is the relationship between Israel and the Jewish diaspora. He recently gave a talk on this topic to the Jewish community in Madrid and later spoke with us about it. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. Something that you said in your talk is that what happens to Israel informs what happens to Jews all over the world, and that the state of Israel is kind of the epicenter for the diaspora, which is becoming less and less significant. And I was wondering how the state is the epicenter and why and how it happened.
The reason I said that is that everything Jewish, in the big sense, in the biggest sort of like word as we can envision it, in terms of security, in terms of culture, in terms of religion, in terms of economics, in terms of the challenges ahead, and the definition, the very definition of Jewish life, is now happening in Israel. Now, this is not kind of a triumphant statement about Israel overwhelming the diaspora and overwhelming Judaism, but it's kind of a statement about reality. The fact that Israel encompasses so many of the Jewish things that are happening while the other issues of diasporic life are being sort of depleted, and especially in Europe as we know it, because of either anti-Semitism or because of the decline of communities, or for that matter even in North America, where lots of Jews still living, but the organizational design, the passion, the issues of Jewish identity themselves have been somewhat declined because of the nature of the community, because of the decline of Jewish ethnicity in the United States, because of the decline in affiliation, perhaps with the exception of the ultra-Orthodox, as I suggested. So Jewish life in Israel is the most vibrant in that respect, and the community of Jews in Israel is also the largest, not only in terms of plurality, soon even to be the majority of the Jews in the world.
Well, going along with that, how can Israel speak for the Jews, since the Jews are such a diverse type of peoples all over the world? I mean, Jews in China, Jews in India, Jews in everywhere.
That is exactly the reason, because not only Israel is a sovereign state, and sovereign states speak for its people as a national state, so everybody in the world thinks of Israel as a representative of the Jews. Even the Pope, the Holy See, who used to decline to accept Israel as a sovereign state because they always saw the sovereign state of Israel something which is almost blasphemous, because it kind of represents an anti-theological point against the Catholic Church, is now understanding when you talk to the Jews, you talk to Israel. And when the Pope Francis is coming to Jerusalem, he even visit the tomb of Herzl, recognizing Zionism as the epic center of Jewish life. So there are no other voices of Judaism that one can apply to. So let's say if someone is looking to speak to a Jewish representative, who is he going to talk to? To the representative of the American Jewish Committee sometimes, but it's only on small matters. On the big matters, they have to speak to the people of Israel. So the question is, who speaks on behalf of the Jews and with what authority is always a big question, and it's becoming more and more evident that Israel is the epic center, and the Prime Minister of Israel, the government of Israel, deciding on most issues which are Jewish related.
I have a problem here grasping this, because can anyone really speak on behalf of the Jews? I mean, how do you define the Jews? Define the Jews. That's something that's been a problem for the Jews forever. You know, what is a Jew?
Look, as I say, it's tough. The definition of a Jew is always an issue. Do we talk about a tribe, the people of Israel? Do we talk about religion? Do we talk about a nation? Do we talk about the Jewish communities? So defined Jews is not, we don't, you know, we can go into it, who is a Jew or not. This is not the key issue. When you talk for Jewish interests, what are the Jewish interests one have to understand? Let's say, for example, the Spanish Jewry may have interest. But who speaks on behalf of Spanish Jewry? Some people perhaps in the community will be intercessors in the community's behalf. But this will be a communal issue. But on big matters, on Jewish security, who speaks about on Jewish security? Who speaks on issues pertaining on anti-Semitism? Who speaks as? So it used to be that the American, the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, was a big voice. But gradually, because anti-Semitism itself is being associated with anti-Israel, Israel is the epic center in that respect, that everything is channeled through the prism of Israel, also in the minds of others. So the Jews speaking on behalf of the Jews is also how the Jews are being perceived around the world, with China, with India, with the United States. When people want to talk to the Jews nowadays, they come to Israel because they see this is what it's all about, whether they like Israel or they don't like Israel. It doesn't matter. But this is, they don't come to Spain. They will not come even to the United States to look for one of the organization. It's only if these organizations will speak with somewhat Israel authority. But it will be very difficult otherwise.
So then this becomes a problem, because if Jews all over the world are defining themselves or relating in some way directly to Israel, then there's the flip side, because if Israel informs what happens to Jews in the diaspora, then doesn't it make it more difficult for Jews who are living Jewish lives abroad in the diaspora? For example, Israeli government policies can be used as an excuse for anti-Semitism towards Jews in the diaspora, even if these Jews don't define themselves
Absolutely.
With regard to Israel.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a double-edged sword sometimes. So sometimes, you know, like people will say, why are you attributing to me what is not at all related to me? So either they're active against the government of Israel policy-wise, or they want to detach themselves. Or they say, you don't leave me alone. I'm Jewish in terms of my religion, and I'm not Jewish in terms of nationality. And I'm even hostile to the Israeli policies, let's say, with regard to the territories. But that, at that point, it's fine. But then the question is, those who are speaking to them, saying, on what we're going to talk to you about, your communal life, support for your communal life, like in England or like in Holland, it will be a very, I would say, limited interaction with the communities, either as a minority in their countries of domicile, or in terms of their memory, let's say the Holocaust memory, or such issues, but it will not be on the big issues. And in that respect, you're absolutely correct. The Jews are implicated, whether they like it or not, with what is happening in Israel. Sometimes they are implicated in terms of, like, terrorist attacks, like in Argentina and the Jewish Community Center, or in the hate to Israel comes to them, as some will say. But sometimes it is because of also pride of Israel. Israel sort of like triumphs in so many fields, in culture and technology and so on. So they feel pride and associated. So, but if they don't want to be associated with Israel, it's becoming more and more difficult for them, that's what I'm saying, to keep their Jewishness. Because what is Jewishness? Jewishness is either religious affiliation, you need to go to a synagogue, and Ultra-Orthodox can do it very nicely. They keep the synagogue. Or peoplehood. And if you don't have Jewish communities in the diaspora, which is one of the biggest challenges now, you find it more difficult to be associated as a Jew unless you have some degree of affiliation with Israel. That's why when they created Taglit, sort of like birthright Israel, is this idea that people who are becoming more and more detached can come and visit and regain some forms of solidarity and understanding of the tribe, because the Jewish people are in the end of the day a tribe first and foremost, rather than just members of a religious denomination.
I understand that the Jewish Agency, for example, is recognizing the fact that there are many Jewish people who want to stay in the diaspora, and whereas they used to spend a lot of money trying to get people to make aliyah, now they're investing a lot of money, for example, in the United States in Jewish day schools to keep a Jewish identity in the diaspora.
Yeah, it's exactly because of the understanding, both of the UJA and the government in Israel also putting money abroad, is that the pool of Jews who are not part of Israel is in decline, either because of they are escaping the countries of origin or moving to Israel because of opportunities, or because they have been so successful they are losing their Jewish identity. So if you have like former Soviet Jewry, or people who are now coming in the war in Ukraine and so on, so Israel is the home for them. Perhaps they didn't choose it initially, but now they see it's the home for them. Or French Jews who are coming in the last few years because of the events happening in France, or even British Jews for that matter. So Israel is playing this on all sides. On the one hand, understanding that the pool of Jews in the diaspora has to be nourished, otherwise they will be kind of removed all the way from Judaism, and this is the place where Jews can really thrive if Israel want them one day to come over or to have Jews abroad. And at the same time, Israel also calling on them to move to Israel and to build a life with their families, and therefore nourishing that side of them not to move away from Judaism altogether. So indeed, this is a new policy, or let's say, I won't say new policy, but that the thinking about the Jews in the diaspora is something which is debased, is no longer in the minds and hearts of Israelis, including Israelis abroad, that are no longer being described as Yordim, as Nefolet Shel Nemushot, as those who kind of deserted, but rather these are the people that we have to nourish. This is the pool from which we will draw later on, either for our strategic interest, economic interest abroad, or they will come and join us in due time. So we are keeping the diasporic connection with them.
In the beginning, and it's understandable, the idea was for everybody to become Israeli and to sort of put aside their cultures that they came from and the languages. But I know that now in Israel there are different ethnic groups, different Jewish groups from different places that sort of stay in their own communities. And I would like to know to what extent these communities, after, let's say, two generations, if they keep any of their original cultures. I think I've heard that the Moroccans, for example, still have some of the ideas towards the daughters, that the daughters shouldn't have the education, that kind of thing. Is that really still happening?
There is a very strong Israelization process all around. And the Israelization process means that everybody is really sucked into the Israeli culture, Israeli language, which is, of course, Hebrew, the entire, I would say, spirit of the place. At the same time, like in many other ethnic groups in the world, the third generation or fourth generation want to remember what the first generation wanted to forget. They just wanted to revive issues as a folklore, as a way of looking back, hearkening back, remembering, remaining with some ties to the tradition. And that is happening also in Israel. So if you have Moroccan Jews reviving old Jewish holidays like the Mimuna, and it's become kind of a national holiday, things that their parents perhaps didn't celebrate in such a grandiose manner, or other groups like Russian Jews, people say, you know, they will be amongst themselves speaking only Russian. But you can see Russian Jews, third, fourth generation, now third generation, the old Israelis, they are placed in Israeli society in the most important positions. But they want also the kids to know where they came from and so on. This is what it's all about. There's also kind of appreciation of languages, people traveling back and abroad. But it doesn't mean that the community is divided into ethnic groups, each and one of them maintaining their tradition. It's rather after they have used the melting pot, they're trying to draw on what they had also in order to distinguish themselves sometime and retain an additional semblance of community, which will be within themselves and within their tradition, not to forget their parents and grandparents' generation.
I wanted to speak with you briefly, finally, about the work that you've done about diasporas in general, because I find it very interesting that you say that other diasporas, that is, diasporas, have an influence on their homeland.
Yes.
Now, when you say diasporas, are you referring to expats? Or are you, I mean, because the Jewish diaspora, they didn't exactly come from Israel 2 days ago.
Yes.
Are you referring to expats, let's say, from different countries who live somewhere else? And how do they influence their original countries?
It varies very much among people. But many countries in the world have their keen communities abroad for a variety of reasons. Either they were pushed away or they were pulled by other attraction abroad. And they've built communities abroad. And there is a growing understanding that these communities abroad can be an asset for the homeland. And sometimes the communities themselves are organizing in such a manner which have interest in the homeland, because the homeland focus is a key element in organizing and mobilizing the community while in the diaspora, before the diaspora will spread around and perhaps even will integrate or assimilate into the host society. So they keep ties with the homeland, of course, if they have family in the homeland, and they are caring about the homeland. This is their heritage. So either they send money to the homeland in terms of remittances or donations, trying to influence what is happening in the homeland. They want to influence, for example, supporting the territories, against the territories, peace now, or supporting the settlers. They want to support the denominational organizations of their religion. So reform people, reform movement will try to build a reform hub in Jerusalem, or the conservative, or the Armenians will try to change the Armenian mindset vis-a-vis the Armenian genocide, because in Armenia they don't deal with the genocide, but the Armenian diaspora is very much the genocide. The Armenian genocide is the key factor that mobilized the diaspora and created solidarity and create its uniqueness. So they push the government in Armenia to recognize the genocide, to mark it as a key phenomena in the collective memory of Armenia, and address the diaspora in all its dealing with Turkey, for example, or the Indian diaspora, which is very much a powerful diaspora that can send money to India, and India will respect it, and can also disseminate into India the new religion or the old religion, Hindutva, which is sort of the Hindu religion, because they can be organized, they can have relations to media and so on. So diasporas are active in the homeland for the sake of themselves and for the sake of shaping the homeland, perhaps to the time when they come back, or to the way that will fit with their identity while they're abroad.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
First of all, I'm delighted to be here in Spain. I see the remnants of the diaspora, the beauty of Madrid, and I see, I was yesterday in the synagogue, you know, speaking to some members of the community. And I think that, as you can see, you know, in Spain today, people say there are 3,000 or 4,000 Jews remaining. The ties to Israel are incredibly important. It's tough to maintain communities when they are small because of problems of intermarriage. In Israel, this problem doesn't occur because Jews meet Jews. They don't meet other people in that respect. And I think the Jewish people always should remember that there is Arvut Adadi, there is Kol Israel Arvim Ze Laze, which means all of Israel are responsible for each other. And you know, the love that exists, the intimate love, the intimate connection should be nourished and should be fostered. And I think today, when Israel is becoming the epic center, Israel has a tremendous responsibility to do whatever it can. The diasporic Jews will thrive, will survive in their countries of domicile, will have connection to Israel, because we are not such a large people. We are small people of 14 million that have survived so many things. And I think it is a responsibility of everybody to support and nourish this survival and this existence with all its beautiful manifestations. That's all.
Thank you very much. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.